It's Wisconsin Today. I'm Kate Archer-Kent.
And I'm Rob Ferret. The Wisconsin State Legislature is working through a new set of PFAS regulations that represent a compromise between Democrats and Republicans.
A Senate committee passed the package of bills last week after the full assembly passed the bills at the end of last month.
Governor Tony Evers has said he will sign it once passed. Last week, he also signed off on new state PFAS and lead rules that match with the Federal Environmental Protection Agency enacted under the Biden administration.
The bills in the legislature would establish programs and requirements to address PFAS contamination while creating exemptions to the state's environmental remediation law.
We're checking in on how this compromise came together and what it means for water pollution and cleanup of so-called forever chemicals. Eric Wimberger is a Republican state senator for Wisconsin's 2nd Senate District, northwest of Green Bay. He's a co-author of the bills. Senator Wimberger, thanks a lot for joining us today.
Sure. Thanks for having me. Good morning.
This has been some time in the making. One of the big hangups, I understand, when it came to compromise was the exemptions. Who gets exempted? Who won't be held liable for PFAS cleanup on their property? What was the sticking point? Where did you end up on that?
Sure. Yeah, that was really my concern the whole time was, well, we're transitioning from a paradigm where PFAS was not considered hazardous to a paradigm where it is considered hazardous. And so people are going to just come to encounter this in their ground and they didn't know it was there and they didn't put it in there. But the way the law is written right now, and we're changing it, but the way it's written right now is that it kind of doesn't matter how it got into your ground. If you have it in your ground, you possess it, and one molecule is floating through the water table to another person's property, well, then you're an emitter. And that needed to change. And I don't think that last time around, last session, when we were working on this, the governor and the DNR were open to that concept. But they've come around here, and I think the right thing is probably going to happen here.
And who in particular do you have in mind might find this PFAS on their property, their fields, their business grounds, whatever, that would be exempted from the spills law under that so-called innocent user law?
Sure. We have three primary, I guess, ways it can happen. You could be next to an industry that put it in the ground. So there it is floating through the water table underneath your house and into, you know, the neighbor. But, there it is in your property and there's a molecule going from your property to another property. So it could be going through the aquifer from an industry. It could be coming through from an airport because they had firefighting foam. So if you have, for instance, French Island in La Crosse, that's the entirety of their problem. You have 1,800 contaminated wells, but one neighbor is technically contaminating the next neighbor because that airport tested that firefighting foam, upstream there. And then you have farms. So we deal with our biosolids from municipal treatment plants by spreading it on the farm fields. A lot of people don't like to hear that unsavory, fact of our existence, but that's how we deal with the biosolids at the municipal treatment plant. Is a lot of times we spread it on the farm fields, and there's some 13,000 plus locations that we spread on the farm fields, and there's some paper companies that we're spreading on the farm fields too. What you'll have is a farm that a lot of things were taken out of those biosolids, but PFAS was not taken out of those biosolids and they didn't know that. So it exempts those types of things. And you might be in a subdivision that is on an old farm field, and every single business and residence that's on that needs to be exempt, and they will be.
All right, that's the exemption side of things. Now, when it comes to finding, testing, remediating PFAS, what is in this new package of legislation?
Sure. Well, it starts to appropriate that $125 million. With the interest, it's up to like $133 now. But I think what's really key in all this is that when we get people new wells, cased wells, and by the way, a farm, if they want to sprinkle their water on their crops, that's technically a hazardous substance discharge if their well is contaminated. So we get them new wells in a clean part of the aquifer, and we distribute that. It also makes sure that any sort of settlement money from whoever's the true responsible party, that settlement money goes directly into that fund. So it'll be a substantial a dent in the PFAS problem.
And as we wrap up, Senator, this passed the Assembly, as we mentioned, unanimously, Senate committee unanimously. What's the timeline for full Senate passage?
Well, we're on the floor here in a week, I want to say. I haven't heard any grumblings about no's, and I'd have to say this is a real legislative accomplishment. I gotta toot my own horn here. it was a controversial topic, and to be able to get a unanimous vote in the Assembly, hopefully a unanimous vote in the Senate, I think is a real legislative win.
Senator Wimberger, thanks again for joining us.
Thanks.
That's Eric Wimberger, Republican State Senator for Wisconsin's 2nd District, northwest of Green Bay, with us to share new PFAS legislation, a compromise between Democrats and Republicans in the legislature over how the forever chemicals should be addressed under state law. Now we'll take a closer look at the potential impact of these new guidelines and regulations. David Strifling is with us, Associate Professor of Law and Director of the Water Law and Policy Initiative at Marquette University. Dave, welcome back to the show.
My pleasure. Thanks for having me again.
Let's start with this bill. Looks like it's on its way out of the Assembly and headed to Governor Evers. Do you see things here that will make concrete steps to get PFAS out of the ground and out of the groundwater that leads to our drinking water?
Well, first, I'd agree with the senator. It's really remarkable that we have this unanimous bipartisan agreement on this bill. I don't think anyone expected that a couple of years ago. And I do think it's really important to unlock what some had started calling that PFAS trust fund of $132 or $33 million to start addressing this issue. And there are certainly municipalities throughout the state that need that money. And, you know, we can pick and choose that about, you know, exactly which parts of this we agree with or how it's all going to shake out. But in broad strokes, unlocking that money is a really important step.
On the one hand, $130 some million sounds like a lot. On the other hand, we hear about PFAS contamination in so many places, so many communities in Wisconsin. Is this a drop in the bucket compared to the need here?
Well, we're waiting to see exactly what we're going to find when we really start sampling for this thing. It may be. It may turn out not to be enough by tenfold. We don't really know, and we'll have to cross that bridge when we come to it, but you have to take the first step, even on a long journey.
Now, as we mentioned, Governor Evers also adopted this new rule change to the state's drinking water standards for PFAS, as well as lead, to match standards set by the Environmental Protection Agency under the Biden administration. Those are in flux now under the Trump administration. What is the meaning of that change here in Wisconsin to set this as our state standard?
So those are drinking water standards, mm-hmm. and certainly an important step. So, you know, if you have a municipal drinking water system, a system that's providing water to a whole community, that's going to become really important in that context. What it doesn't reach is those who are on private wells, which is a significant number of Wisconsin citizens. And so that's why the DNR is also moving towards adopting groundwater standards for PFAS as well. So, you know, that would touch those who are consuming even groundwater from private wells as well.
Is it a heavier lift, Dave, for those private wells and that groundwater? Because for a municipal source, it might be expensive, but we've got one treatment facility or a handful of treatment facilities, and we're trying to get all the PFAS out there versus, hey, there's 1,000 people in this county, each with their own wells, each with their own groundwater. Is that a harder problem to solve?
Absolutely. Absolutely. And the reason is the frequency of testing that's required. You know, DNR advises those who have private wells to test at a certain frequency, but there's no real hammer to enforce that. With the municipal systems, they're subject to much more significant requirements in terms of how frequently they test, what they test for, and what they have to do when they do find contamination. So the private well issue is really a significant problem.
Dave, these conversations we're having, it's all about PFAS that's already in the ground, that's already in the water. This is a huge class of chemicals used in so many different applications over the last few decades. What about new PFAS? Have we got regulations in place or industry standards changes so we're not putting more of this stuff into our water?
Well, the states are very different in terms of that. Some have entirely banned PFAS in manufacturing. Others really haven't taken many steps at all. And partly that's because of, you know, the federal government's reluctance to do much on that score, at least yet. So I think, you know, we're not where we were 10 years ago, and certainly in terms of PFAS use, but I think it's a sort of a patchwork as you look at the states.
Looking at the federal government, as we mentioned, the EPA under the Biden administration had new standards. Those are, last I checked, Dave, in flux under the Trump administration. What are you looking at in the federal government right now when it comes to setting PFAS standards?
Yeah, it's going to be interesting to see what the federal government does. On the drinking water front, they do seem to be moving forward with at least a couple of the PFAS drinking water standards that the Biden administration put in place, but not others. And so the federal government certainly does have a PFAS action plan, but in terms of what that actually means and what that looks like, there haven't been too many concrete steps yet. So it's really been falling to the states to do things like we're talking about today in terms of, you know, exempting certain landowners from the spills law and freeing up money for the state to address some of this contamination. I think this is a really important step.
And briefly, as we wrap up, Dave, we've talked a lot about PFAS on this show over the years. We may take for granted. Why do we worry about these chemicals in our drinking water?
Yeah, absolutely. They're so long lasting. They're really difficult to break down. And that's what made them valuable for all those industrial uses. But it also makes them really difficult to remove from the environment, from groundwater, from land. And we also know that they're deadly in terms of the cancers that they cause and the other negative health effects. So, again, you know, I think how this all is actually going to shake out is going to be for the courts to decide in some cases in terms of what actually qualifies for some of these exemptions. But it's really important to take this first step of, you know, starting to address some of these areas of contamination and freeing up this big pot of money to do that in Wisconsin.
Dave, we'll leave it there. Thanks again for joining us.
Thank you.
That's Dave Strifling, Associate Professor of Law and Director of the Water Law and Policy Initiative at Marquette University, with us to share his look at a new compromise on PFAS regulations in the state legislature. Earlier, we heard from Republican State Senator Eric Wimberger about the bills and the bipartisan negotiations behind them.